like to welcome Reha Kumar to episode of Desify today, and the episode name is Breaking the Cycle. Reha is the owner and founder of Rekha Yoga. Rekha Yoga is on a mission to reintroduce yoga to the mainstream in its culturally and spiritually authentic form, and make it a truly accessible and affordable means to well-being for all bodies and every type of body. She started her yoga journey in her childhood years, and now combined with a psychology major, her passion to positively initiate change in the mental health and well-being sector has only grown. Rekha Yoga embodies cultural roots wholly and at the same time is scientifically succinct. Welcome, Reha.
Namaste. Thank you for having me on today.
So a lot of us have not been taught to regulate our emotions, something I feel that parents should teach children at a young age. In South Asian culture, we grew up with the instilled belief that having and expressing emotions is bad. In a lot of Desi households, there is an emphasis on focusing on the positive side of life, while negative emotions are swept under the rug. And this, I believe, can lead to outbursts of anger, frustration, and resentment. How did your parents express their emotions when you were growing up?
My parents mostly expressed their emotions in actions. And yes, you are right in the sense that, you know, certain bad feelings, bad big feelings were kept away, and we weren't really allowed to express it as much as we needed to, because it was frowned upon. And, you know, I grew up thinking that that wasn't good enough. And, you know, rightly so, as we grow up, we want to be heard, we want to be seen, we want our emotions to be validated and be understood by the people we love, the people that are growing with us. But also, as I've grown and gotten older and had more experience, like, I get it. And that's also a blessing and a curse, because, you know, I personally am Indian. I am Fijian Indian, and my ancestors are the Gurmits. So the Gurmits are the Indians that were taken from India by the British to be slaves on the sugarcane farms in Fiji. And Fiji is just one of the places they were taken. You know, there was also South Africa, and you name it, they were taken. But that's where my ancestors are from. And that's where they were taken. And so we have a history of oppression, you know, and not just in Fiji, but if you think about India, we have a history of oppression because they were still colonized, you know, and they were taken to these different parts of the world on these false promises that it's going to be better for your family. So they went on this venture to be able to do better for their family, provide for their families. These people don't have a chance to say goodbye, to say I love yous. But they went, and they hold to this trauma, and we are the children of our ancestors. You know, our parents are the children of our ancestors. So we come from oppression. We come from a colonized background. I think being able to express your feelings is a privilege. And some of us don't have that privilege. Lots of us don't have that privilege. If you think about therapy, how expensive is therapy, right? Talk therapy is some of the best psychiatrists that you would go to would be like $250 an hour. They start at like $120, I think, something like that, right? And I think counselors are like a little bit cheaper, but it is a privilege to be able to talk through your emotions. And we don't have that, you know, and well, some of us don't have that. I don't want to talk for everyone, but I get it. I get why South Asian parents are like that. I don't think that it like it is excusable though, but I get it. And I wish it was a little different. But yeah, especially when it comes to like the feeling of anger, lots of people often, and not just South Asians, right? Not lots of people associate anger as a bad feeling, but why? It's such a healthy emotion. You know, if you don't feel angry, I'm sorry, that's unhealthy. Because if you don't feel angry, then you're going to express it in other ways. And you don't want to be destructive in those other ways. If you're angry, okay, you can express your anger. You know, you don't have to be destructive. You don't have to hit someone. You don't have to break something. You know, you don't have to cause something to happen, but you can express your feelings. And it's hard because when you don't get taught that, of course you're not going to know how to regulate it. You're not going to know how to explore what that feeling even means and what is happening to your body and your thoughts and what's going through your mind. So yeah, they expressed it to actions. I know there was love there, but I also understand that the history that we come from, our ancestors are freedom fighters. Our ancestors were just trying to survive. They were trying to work and make sure that we would stay alive. So everything else was secondary or almost non-existent. But yeah.
Yes, absolutely. That was really insightful. And I think that, yes, because often children of South Asian descent are not taught how to express their emotions or express their anger, we as adults are actively learning how to express anger in a healthy manner.
Mm-hmm.
I often use humor as a coping mechanism. I saw a reel the other day on Instagram where a girl told her mom, "Main depression mein ja rahi hu," which translates to "I'm going into depression," and her mom's reply was, "Ha, dhaniya leke aana," which translates to, "Okay, bring coriander on your way back." So I think that was really hilarious. Tell me about why you started Rekha Yoga.
Firstly, like that, being able to express or laugh about your emotions or the turmoil is a coping mechanism, right? And we can laugh about it, but even I have used it previously. I still use it now, and it's you have to lighten the mood because that's your survival instinct. You know, that's my survival instinct. Laughing about it helps, but also I think laughing about it or seeing, making light of the event also helps you move forward because you're able to be like, oh yeah, it's funny because people see it that way. I get it, but let's do something differently. So Rekha Yoga. Rekha Yoga is my love child. Rekha Yoga started because I was introduced to yoga at a young age. And it is ingrained in who I am. When I was in primary school, I had the privilege of being sent to yoga classes daily. And, just to track back a little, we don't come from a lot. We come from a very poor family where we had to make ends meet, and you know, my parents worked very hard, and then we had a little shop, you know, just the typical stereotype of an Indian with a dairy. And we had a carver shop back in Fiji, and that was working well, and we were surviving. So I was sent to this temple that was actually just up the road from us, and that was like community, right? We had faith. And that faith showed up in community. So this was this temple, the Fiji Sevashram Sangha temple. That's where they taught yoga. So I was sent there. And, that was a beautiful journey to go inwards, to learn about myself, learn about my body, learn about my breath, learn about my ancestors. Because I'm Fijian Indian, I don't know about my ancestors, you know. In Fiji, we have quite a lost identity, I think, because we don't belong as Pacific Islanders because we're not originally from there. There's also been several coups there where the Fijians, the military has taken over the government, and there have been moves to kill the Indians. So we also moved to New Zealand during one of those coups, just after one of those coups to survive that. So this temple and this yoga practice was an attempt, I guess, by my parents to invite me to connect to my history, my ancestors. And it was beautiful because I learned, you know, the Indian national anthem, which I would have never known. I learned how to write and read in my language. I learned mantras. I, you know, learned how to service other people and other communities, and how to selflessly give to them. We used to go around to different villages as part of our yoga camps and, practice yoga there, show them what yoga is and help those communities. We still do a lot of charity events, and that was me in primary school doing that. So it was a really good upbringing to learn that. And then when we moved to New Zealand, it was very different because I was even afraid to tell my friends that I was a yoga student or that I did yoga, because even their vision of yoga was bendiness. It was like gymnastics, you know. So I used to like keep it hidden. I'm like, I would just do my own practice at home, because when I went to studios, it was very different here. It was very ableist. It was very, I'm sorry, whitewashed. There was very rarely any Indians in class, any South Asians in class. There was a lot of sexism. There was also a lot of sexual misconduct that happened. There was also a lot of sexualizing of the female body. And it shows on Instagram as well, right? Lots of influencers were popular when it comes to yoga. They all show their bodies in certain ways that you would practice in the bedroom. And that's what brings them following. So it was like completely detached from this very sacred thing that I knew, that I used to practice at the temple, to like something very different here. And so it was really interesting for me, because I was like, I'm South Asian. You know, this is a part of my culture. This is a part of who I am. This is something that I know. It's my language, you know, metaphorically. But I couldn't access it here. So that was always at the back of my mind, that I that's not accessible to me, for someone who knows about it, you know. Also coming from a South Asian family, there was this merging of understanding the self, which was influenced by yoga, but also understanding the behaviors that come from the mind and the mind that influences the behaviors, everything vice versa, you know. And that led me to want to study psychology. And it helped me understand myself. It helped me understand and forgive my parents and my family members, you know, which is a beautiful start, to be honest, because I think lots of us go through just blaming our parents, and rightly so, because our feelings are justified. When I always knew, I guess, that I would want to be a yoga educator, especially because I saw year after year that the situation of how yoga was presented was just getting out of hand. It was just very different to what it is meant to be. And I know that it is meant to evolve and change with the times, but it shouldn't mean that it's not sustainable. You know, it shouldn't mean that the entire culture that it comes from is completely removed from it, because that's not what changing with time means. You don't neocolonize, you don't recolonize something, you know. It's not okay. That's what I found was happening when it came to yoga. So what happened during lockdown was that I noticed that people that are close to me, they weren't able to regulate their emotions. They weren't able to understand their feelings. They weren't able to understand and know how to be okay. And it's hard, right? Because we weren't put into that situation before. No one was said, hey, you can't exit the house. It was a very bizarre time during lockdown. And I was like, oh, I wish there was something that I could tell my friends that we could do. And I was like, oh, wait, there is. But even when people, you know, the studios in Auckland were offering it online, it was just very different. It was just movement. And I was like, that's not, like, I know we need movement, but that's also not what we need right now. We need to slow down and understand the feelings, understand the senses, understand the influences. So that's what encouraged me to finally just put my foot forward and be like, hey, you know what? I'll become a teacher. And that meant doing a teacher training. So I just chose whatever one was just there for me, and did it, because I knew that if in New Zealand they were teaching yoga a certain way, there wouldn't be a teacher training that would actually teach me the traditional way. Like, that was out of question. So I just did whichever one was presented, and that began my journey to make yoga more accessible, make it more affordable, invite more people from its own culture back into the practice, be able to teach people that I know, my friends and families, people that are South Asian, that we have this thing that comes from familiarity that we all know that we can use to help us move forward and understand ourselves. And the best way to understand the world is to understand the self. So that's what all of those combined is what moved me to start Rekha Yoga. And Rekha Yoga is actually R-E-H-A is my name, and then the two K's are my middle and my surname. And Rekha is actually the lines on the palm of your hand, and we believe that your Rekha is basically your journey of life. So that's what Reka Yoga is. Yeah.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yes, I can definitely relate to a lot of the things that you talked about. I myself grew up in quite a chaotic household. My dad has volatile behavior, so I often felt like I was the reason for his impatience or anger. And I feel that this led me to be a people pleaser and somewhat of a doormat when it comes to romantic relationships. So I feel that the relationship that our parents model for us really sets the tone for our romantic relationships. And there's also a lot of unlearning to be done in the space as well. I think our generation is starting to be more open when it comes to people expressing their emotions, and more specifically, men expressing their emotions as well. Did you ever feel like you were responsible for your parents' emotions, or feel a need to keep peace in the house?
Firstly, I just wanted to say you are not responsible for what your dad expressed or his emotions. And that could never be your fault. So please don't think that way. And I'm sorry you had to go through that. And I'm sorry you had to experience that. Yes, it would be a lie if I said no. I have had to grow up quite quick. Even when we were in Fiji, because we had a shop, my childhood years looked like coming home to look after the shop, going to the yoga class, coming back, looking after the shop. You know, some days in primary school, we would stay up till like 1 or 2 in the morning with my mum or my dad looking after the shop, because you could open it till that late. And you just wake up in the morning, you go to school, and you come back and you're back to being, you know, a child adult. And even when my dad had moved here before us to, you know, I guess set us up and look for places and whatnot. And even then, when he was here and we were there, I used to do like the gardening. You know, I used to collect all the cabbages, tie them up and sell them. I used to make like ice blocks to sell in the shop. I used to do all these like adult things, including looking after the shop. You were just responsible, you know, because you had to help, because the only way forward was to be working. It wasn't to have fun. It wasn't to be a child. It was you had to work. Like I said, when we don't have that privilege, you know. Back then I used to think it was like fine till I grew up and I was like, oh, I didn't really have all these fun things that everyone else is talking about, or as much of it, you know. Then when we moved here, my mom and dad split up after a few years. And so that was very shocking, because in South Asian families, you don't split up, you know, no matter how bad it gets. Usually it's quite toxic. People stay together. So I think that's one thing that I'm quite grateful for, that they've showed me that if it's not okay, if it's not working, go separate ways, you know. And yeah, that's a great example that they've set. Back when it happened, I was still young. I was like 15, 16. I didn't know how to cope with it. You know, I turned quiet, because I used to be very close to my dad. I was like my dad's shadow. Everywhere he went, I went. So it was very hard to comprehend. My sister and my brother, who were older than me, I think they were able to voice themselves a bit more, whereas I was just like in shock. I was like, oh, my dad used to always be here. Now he's not. But also my mom suffered a lot because of it. And it wasn't even like, it's not her fault that we had to look after her. She didn't expect it. You know, she didn't know that she was going to leave her entire family behind and come to a different country to give a better life to her children. And she would not have a husband, you know, there. And she didn't know how to navigate New Zealand. She could barely speak English. She hadn't lived there for that long. She didn't know. So yeah, it was hard. We had to be there for her. Obviously we had to a certain extent be there for our dad, but we don't even know how to, because he wasn't around, you know. We 100% did have to. I know that I had to.
I can also relate to that on various levels. I think that I feel like people even within like different countries like India, Pakistan, or Bangladesh, because of the shared cultural values, I think a lot of people from these countries have had very similar upbringings, and that's, you know, another thing that I'm just that I'm exploring in Desified. I also think that South Asian parents are the OG gaslighters. they always manage to make us feel like we're demanding too much, when in reality we were just struggling with a lot of things. One of them was carrying the weight of the expectations. I think it's very conditional love. And I also feel that obedience is huge in Desi culture. What has been your experience around obedience or respecting elders?
Oh, wow. I was a very obedient child, only because I was terrified. So if no one has taught you, you don't know. And I think that's one thing for our parents, right? They have been modeled a certain thing generation after generation. They don't know. They don't know any better. I think we're very privileged in the sense that we're all growing up and we're like, hey, let's have this conversation. We don't want these for our children, which is very beautiful because we're initiating this change now. But they don't know what they don't know. My dad would be like, do you want to be like that? Do you want that smack? And I'm like, no, it's okay. I'll just do it, you know? So I used to be very obedient. Although I was the youngest, I basically kind of was the oldest, you know, because my sister and my brother would get to do things and I would just be helping. And it's very different because, like, boys have it easy when it comes to South Asian families, and females don't, because we're like the nurturing, responsible from the get-go, you know. It's just this expectation put on us. I was very obedient because I was just afraid of getting, you know, smacked. And the good thing also, I think, alongside that was that in yoga classes we got taught that, you know, we got taught respect for our parents, for our birth givers, respect for the elders. And it's good in a sense, because I think that if you don't have someone teaching you growing up, you know, there's lots of children that I see now who don't have a little bit of strictness in them, and they're just very rude. And I'm like, I'm scared when I listen to them, because I'm like, oh, no, you can't say that. You know, you can't do that. But then as I've grown older, and I guess with my parents taking the unconventional route of, well, I say unconventional because although it is normal, of splitting up, it showed me that actually you don't have to fit into a box, you know. So when something isn't right, you can speak up about it. And when it comes to yoga and, you know, going through uni and standing up for myself, it all tied in together to make me more vocal. You know, I went from this quiet person to be like, actually, if I'm quiet, right, there are the people that have it worse than me. If I don't speak up, who's going to stand up for them? You know, I want to have children in the future. I want to be able to stand up for them. How is that going to happen if I can't say it? You know, if I can't stand up for myself. So I need to be there for myself. I am the world before the world is the world, you know. And that is also what we get taught in yoga. So I started just speaking up more for myself. And, you know, you make enemies, even with all the nice auntie and uncles from your community. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. Like, you have to stand up for yourself. When you stand up for the right thing, lots of people won't like you. And that's okay. But there are people that you're standing up for. And that's what happens with yoga as well. I find that with the conversation with regards to yoga and appropriation, you have to stand up, because we've had years of no one standing up, and look at what's happened to what yoga is now. You know, it's very different. And yeah, like not every non-brown teacher appropriates. There's not, and not every brown teacher is a great yoga teacher, you know. But you need people to point out right from wrong. And if people aren't confident enough to do it, everyone's complacent, and that's not okay.
Absolutely. I agree. I definitely agree with that. And I think that it's really important to be vocal about the things that you don't agree with, or you think that are wrong, or you think that are harmful to society. And I definitely think that it's standing up for what you believe in is really important. I think what we're doing here is also breaking the cycle, because we're trying to liberate our lineage, because we're trying not to repeat what our parents went through and just break that cycle of generational trauma. So I think it's we definitely connect on that level.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome, because, you know, our ancestors are freedom fighters. We are our ancestors, and in the bad and the good way, right? Because in the bad way, in the sense that we carry the trauma still to this day. There was this research done where, I can't remember the exact details, but mice were used to, I think they were presented like a fruit, and once they ate it, they were shocked. But previously, it was just like a pleasant, what do you call it? And I've lost the word for it. It was just a pleasant thing for them that they were just given, you know. And what happened was that when these mice were bred, several generations later, they found that the newer generation, when they were presented with the scent of that fruit, they were, you know, shuddering because they were scared of the shock that they would get. But how did they know that? You know, it was generations down the line because their mice ancestors felt the shock to the point where I think some of them would, you know, pee because it was such a strong shock, which, yeah. But yeah, we are our ancestors, you know, in the good and the bad.
Yes, absolutely. I really like that sentiment that they essentially were freedom fighters. Mm. And I think that they walked so that we could run.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and I, in a lot of ways, like I definitely am grateful for a lot of things that our parents have done for us. I think that they have shaped us to be career driven and resilient. But I also think that one area in which they could have done a lot better is in teaching us to manage our emotions and also taking responsibility for their own behavior. Instead of being emotionally manipulative or dramatic. But I think that's definitely something that, yes, we are learning as we go to express emotions in a healthy manner. Mm. And also not to bleed on people who didn't cut us. Because often what happens is that if we don't process, say, for example, anger or resentment that we're feeling, then it can be quite damaging to our relationships. Mm. And if we take it out on other people or take it out in ways that are very unhealthy.
Mm, like in relationships, right? And normally that's what happens to lots of people. What they lack from their immediate community or family is what they try and get in their partners, right? And then there's this knock-on effect of abuse and everything else that comes with it, including additional trauma, mental health issues, you know, even suicide. And it's a bottom-up approach. It needs to start somewhere. People need to talk about it. But I think that when it comes to people from our parents' generation, it is quite hard because they're quite rigid in their thoughts, you know. Some of them are open-minded and are willing, but I think when you've had, you know, just years and years and years of being a certain way, it's hard for them to change. But also it's no excuse, you know, like they're still living people that are dependent on you. And I don't think that we should think that once our parents are older, they're no longer responsible. Once we're older, we're no longer responsible. You know, we're still always responsible for the next step in our lives or the next year of our lives, and everyone else that comes with us.
Yes, definitely. I think that it's really important to take accountability for your own emotions and to be responsible for how you're feeling and not take it out in any ways that that were normalized when we were growing up. Like if we saw our parents behaving in a certain way, we would continue that. But that's what we're trying to break here. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode. I really loved unpacking this topic.
Welcome to Psychotron. Just take now.